Welcome to Transformed. I'm your host, Mike Powers. We are excited to welcome Charles Stone, a veteran pastor, to our episode today as we talk about his new book, Five Ministry Killers and How to Defeat Them. Did you know that before pastors reach burnout and leave the ministry, they experience a lot of frustration and disappointment? With this new book, Charles is seeking to help his fellow pastors understand and meet ministry challenges and regain hope and energy to continue in their calling. Based on new information from the Barna Group and additional research, Stone shows readers what pastors are saying about ministry and how to overcome the obstacles, rebuild community within the congregation, and persevere with joy. Let's listen in as Dr. Matthew Smith talks about five ministry killers and how to defeat them with Charles Stone.
Well, welcome to the Transform Podcast. We are thrilled to have with us today Dr. Charles Stone. And he has a new book out that you're going to want to buy, probably a caseload of. It's called Five Ministry Killers and How to Defeat Them. Welcome, Charles. Why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Will do, man. Great to be with you. I'll give you kind of a quick snapshot of who I am and add a few little interesting tidbits people might not know about me. First, I grew up in a Christian home, a stable home environment, came to faith when I was in high school. And I thought I'd become a marine biologist one day, so I went to engineering school at Georgia Tech, but learned very quickly there weren't too many jobs in that field, so I thought, well, maybe architecture, maybe go to law school. But while I was at Georgia Tech, a couple of interesting things happened to me. One was I traveled behind the Iron Curtain before the Berlin Wall fell and spent 6 weeks there just really appreciating our country through that experience. In fact, I actually spent a few days in the hospital where I lost so much weight I looked like a skeleton. So that was one interesting summer. Another interesting summer, I sold books door-to-door, worked 80 hours a week in Tennessee, and spent a day in jail because I didn't have a license to sell books. So, a lot of interesting experiences. But toward the end of my stay at Georgia Tech, I was planning on going to law school until one night God spoke to me, not an audible voice, but in my heart, He spoke to me, He wanted me to go into vocational ministry. And went to seminary in Texas and met my future wife at the grocery store, Buddy's Winn-Dixie. 2 years later, she married me. And
we love Winn-Dixie.
Yeah, that's right. Still has a place in my heart. But her dad, he's a little bit hovering dad a bit, and I had to ask him 3 times for her hand in marriage before he said yes.
We've
been there for 30 years. Have 3 adult kids. Heather, who was our difficult child for 5 years. She was a wild child, but she actually came back to faith and family. He actually wrote a book together about that one. Middle child, Josh, is in seminary. Smooth sailing in him. And our youngest, Tiffany, is our miracle child. She's had several brain surgeries, the first at age 1, and still struggles with some things, but we've learned a lot about faith through that experience. So, range of experiences for us.
Wow. You have an amazing ministry right now. Tell us a little bit about Ginger Creek Community Church.
Sure. Been here about 6 years. I came from here, from California. I was a teaching pastor in the Central Valley. And this church has been established about 20 years, kind of a contemporary style church. A really, really cool church. Really enjoy what I'm doing. And even though I senior pastor here, one of the most interesting things that I found our folks at church think that's interesting about me is that I'm actually been taking improv classes. And the reason I mention that is, you know, the show, Whose Line Is It Anyway, you know, for a few years is reruns now. Yeah. What I found in my ministry, this improv class has actually helped me improve my preaching and speaking, because with an engineering background, I get a little bit kind of anal sometimes. This has kind of helped boost things up a little bit. So, I enjoy what I'm doing here. Enjoy the winters minus 2 months, but it's just an enjoyable experience with a great staff and a wonderful place to live.
Oh, that's great. Now, this book title, Five Ministry Killers and How to Defeat Them, kind of gets you the idea that it's pretty ominous at first glance. So how'd you come up with such a title, and what prompted you to write such a book?
You've got good question. Well, I guess the genesis of Five Ministry Killers probably came after my first book, and I wanted to continue to write. But I've been in ministry, you know, over 30 years and have experienced a lot of disappointments in not becoming what I suppose I guess every pastor would, at least in his private thoughts, would like to become. You know, somebody very influential, an influential pastor with a really big church like the Rick Warrens, the Bill Hybels, and Andy Stanley's. And because I respect those guys so much, and I know that a lot of us struggle with where we are, I wanted to write a book to help pastors with some of the common struggles that we face. You know, most of us are not going to achieve star status, and I'm not saying these guys in any way started their ministries to have star status. But I think a lot of us tend to compare ourselves and can see ourselves in a less favorable light than how God wants us to see ourselves. So for many years, I was a conference junkie. This was a few years ago. And what prompted this book was coming from a lot of those conferences. Sometimes I found that some of the suggestions that you get at these conferences, the suggestions are not scalable, sometimes not readily applicable, and often not realistic for most pastors with the size of churches where we serve. I consider myself an average kind of a pastor with average leadership and speaking gifts and average ministry challenges. Most pastors, I believe, like me, were not serving and probably won't serve in a mega church. You know, we've not committed any of the major mistakes of ministry, you know, running off the proverbial piano player, or done anything unethical, haven't taught heresy. Yet we face day in and day out challenges that are unique to all pastors. And Matt, I guess I probably see what prompted this book and what it really is really more of a pre-burnout book that helps pastors deal with some of the underlying issues and frustrations that can gnaw at our souls. And the main purpose, although it certainly applies to major crises, is really to speak to a pastor's life and those day-in and day-out experiences that we have. So I thought to write a book that looked at the middle ground where I believe most pastors find themselves, kind of normal, everyday kind of stuff, yet pretty painful, pretty disappointing, and pretty frustrating at times. And if we don't address some of these underlying issues, they potentially could escalate into something very serious. So that's kind of, in short, what prompted the book.
Wow. Well, having been a pastor myself for over 30 years, I know that in reading the book, which, by the way, is very well written, this book spoke deeply to many of the things that I had went through and have gone through and wish that I had been aware of. I'm assuming, then, that you have a target for this book. Who'd you target the book for, and why to them specifically?
Sure. Well, probably a couple of three targets. First, obviously, is pastors, both men and women in ministry, whether they're senior role, associate, or worship student, you know, whatever position they hold. But I believe also lay leaders, deacons, elders, key leaders in every church should read this as well to understand the heart of a pastor. But I think another level as well are those people in churches who have not dismissed the local church as irrelevant, but truly want to help their leaders become all God wants them to become. I think it's helpful for them, because the book is not a slap at pastors, although I'm pretty candid, because I am one, of owning up to some of the challenges and some of the, I think, mistakes we make. But I think it's leadership as well as people in the church that would get a great understanding of what pastors face.
Well, this is an amazingly detailed, footnoted book, so whoever reads it can come back and double-check your figures, and you've not left any wiggle room for, oh, he's just making that up. I mean, you've got some amazing statistics and research in this book. Not that it complicates the reading of it at all, but it just documents where things are. One of the quotes you put in was that Focus on the Family estimates from their studies that 80% of pastors and 84% of their spouses are discouraged or dealing with depression. I can sure see then why the target of this book, one of the targets, is to get into that leadership team and try to lift them up. You talk about these five ministry killers then, and we're talking about these pastors who are struggling in their lives. What are they then exactly?
Sure. Well, this is not in order of priority, but here they are. The first one is what I call the head in the sand mentality. Surprisingly, one out of every 10 pastors said, I don't have any problems. In fact, it's like, why?
Not serving paradise, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Nobody in the church.
one of the surveys.
I like that. It's fun.
Yeah, oh, sure. I think we'd all like to be in a place like that, but these guys, I don't think they're realistic. In fact, one anonymous response was, I love everybody, and everybody loves me. Well, this guy's head is in the sand. So, that's obviously a big ministry killer when we're not owning up to the challenges we face, and everybody faces them. Number two is what I'll call misdirected emotional investment. What I found is that we often get frustrated and upset about the lesser things of ministry, not necessarily those things that frustrate the heart of God. So that's the second one, misdirected emotional investment. And number three is the unhealthy response to issues that come up. You know, all of us respond in some way to the hurts that life throws at us. Some we respond more inwardly, some more outwardly. But the research surfaced some of the big responses, and in this category included both how we respond internally and externally. So that's the third one, unhealthy responses to the issues that come up. Number four is an attitude that me and God can handle this. And this was one of the surprising findings was it's rather predominant that many pastors approach issues in the church with almost a hyper-spiritual approach. Just pray about it, read the Bible, and, you know, me and God can handle this rather than getting help from others. So that was a pretty big finding, that fourth one. Me and God can handle this. The fifth one, I include this fifth one because it did not show up in the research, although other research has clearly indicated this. That is lonely, hurting wives.
Mm.
You can ask almost any pastor's wife, does she struggle? Are there hurts and pains that she uniquely experiences? I would say 99.9% of wives would say yes, yes, yes. In fact, my wife and I co-wrote one of the chapters, and we dialogued about some of these unique challenges. So lonely, hurting wives is a huge one, but it showed up so little in the research in this that I had to include it as one of the main killers.
Now I wanted to stop here, Charles, and I want our listeners to hear that because that's been my experience over time as well. And the many men that I've known in ministry, their wives have literally been the cause of them having to leave the ministry because they were lonely and hurting. And so our listeners really need to hear. All of these are vitally important, but often, as you said, even pastors don't bring that up when you're questioning them. And so we need to make a little more emphasis, I think, on that. That's excellent.
Absolutely. Yep.
Excellent. Now, how did you come up with these five? What was the process of discovery that identified these ministry killers?
Well, one of the reasons that I based this book around research is this. Some books can be written just based on anecdotal experience. In fact, if you look at the Internet and look at some of the statistics about pastors and their frustrations, some of these statistics are urban legends. So what I did was, with my research and then looking at the other research out there, I wanted to find out as much as I could what is real fact. So I hired three research firms, the Barna Group, Lifeway Research, which is the Southern Baptist arm of their research, their denomination, and then Christianity Today. Three of these research firms performed four studies and surveyed almost 2,000 pastors and over 1,000 adults, not in church ministry. So these killers and the backbone of the book, although the book is not necessarily research, was based on some very, very good, solid research. And that's where the killers came from.
Hmm. Wow. So this is, as I said earlier, this book is also well documented, page by page with the detailed footnotes so the reader can find it. What surprised you as you did the research for this book? What did you discover that was particularly shocking to you?
Well, several issues stood out, Matt, but one stuck out like a sore thumb, and maybe it shouldn't have because I have to admit that I've been guilty of that problem too often. But what the research did for me is forced me to step back and objectively see this huge issue. And I want to kind of pick it apart here a bit. Both Lifeway and Barna asked separate groups of pastors the same question. What are the types of issues that cause you, pastor, the most frustration or disappointment between you and your people in the church? Both of these studies, what they did when they took the research, did the study, they categorized the responses into subcategories. And surprisingly, these two different pools of pastors, the survey done at different times, the results were remarkably similar. What I then did was I took all the responses, their subcategories and clump them into three mega themes that summarize the areas that frustrate us most. Now, here was what shocked me. This was like, whoa. 60% of pastors stated that issues related to the church's organization frustrate them most, like volunteers and money and structure and leadership. 60%, 6 out of 10.
Wow.
The rest of the of this finding is quite shocking. 30% stated that issues involving people's lack of a steady walk with Christ, discipleship issues, bother them the most. And then 15% stated that issues about how people relate to each other, like gossip and unity and conflict resolution, bother them. In other words, here's the finding. By a margin of 2-1, church organization matters frustrate us more than our folks' lack of spiritual commitment. By a margin of 4-1, church organizational matters frustrate us more than how well people get along together and love each other.
Wow.
In other words, we are more troubled by organizational matters than we are about Great Commission and Great Commandment issues. What we've done is chosen the wrong benchmarks for success, the wrong priorities. Now, when that came together, because it didn't come together right off until I dug deeper into the research, it shocked me, and yet I had to admit that I, as a pastor, am so often sucked into that 60%. Now, here's the crux of the matter. I believe that we pastors put ourselves on an unhealthy trajectory when we're bothered most about ministry issues that can make us look successful, feed our egos, or boost our self-confidence. And this is so vital to understand, because this is something else I believe. I believe God empowers us for the most effective ministry when His concerns become our primary concerns. That is, when we care most about loving Him and loving others and helping those we serve do the same, we will see God's power at work, and in turn, we'll see many of those organizational issues addressed when we keep the correct priorities. Now, let me kind of add this footnote. In no way do I mean to minimize church organizational issues. They are important, and we must pay attention. My undergrad degree is in industrial and systems engineering, and I can develop organizational systems in my sleep. They are important. All of those things are vitally important. But I believe God wants us to focus more of our attention on spiritual growth issues and relational issues more than organizational issues like numerical success. And that was absolutely the most surprising finding, that so often we're sucked into focusing more on the organizational matters rather than those things that really Jesus focused on, the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. That was the biggest surprise.
Now, you just validify the study that was done at Willow then, not that long ago, and the shock that went through Willow Creek.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So you're seeing a systemic problem, perhaps, in the evangelical church or the Protestant church that we have brought into the conference mentality of how many do you have and how big is your church and prestige, as opposed to these things you're talking about. Would you say that might be part of our problem?
Absolutely. And I don't believe in any way that the majority of pastors intentionally say, you know, I don't think I'm going to focus on Great Commission, Great Commandment. I'm going to focus on these organizational issues. I think the majority of pastors' hearts are right. They want to do the right thing. But it's so subtle, and it slips up on us. I wrote the book, and I struggle with that, too, with the numbers and volunteers, all that administrative stuff. But what happened for me was, as I dug into this, and as I wrote this book, it has honestly helped me become a more peaceful pastor. Even when I get a bad report on Monday that the attendance was down or finances were down. Because I'm finding if I get bothered by what bothers Jesus and give my energy there, I experience His Spirit's power and peace and joy versus when I focus on the mechanical, organizational kinds of things. It's been freeing for me.
Wow. That's great. People who are going to read this book are going to find tremendous help. I know I did. I'm asking the questions, of course, just to kind of pull things out from you, but this book is a tremendous assistance to really helping us grab a hold of this huge issue. I'm thinking of the tyranny of the urgent. It's always the yapping dogs of this thing, that thing, and they're predominantly in this area of organization. And so we focus on the things that are urgent, not the things that maybe are more terminal. Wow, great. Well, tell me, we should let you explain a little bit that this book is a book about the process of recovery from the ministry killers, not so much about the ministry killers themselves, although that's very important and they're well identified. Kind of explain that process of recovery and how that works in the book. So when they pick up the book, they're ready to jump right in.
Sure. Well, I appreciate you asking that question because it's important to make a distinction. The title actually has two parts. The first part is Five Ministry Killers. The second part is And How to Defeat Them. Obviously, the first part builds a case and lays out some statistics that we do have a problem. But the last point points to the solution. So I spend half of the book on what we can do to keep those killers from wrecking our lives, our marriages, or other people's lives. And I suggest a simple, flexible process that any pastor can adapt to his or her particular situation. And I believe if that pastor takes that, adapts it, I think he can begin to surface some of these killers and deal with them before they become too big.
Excellent. You opened up with what I felt was a powerful story, an excellent analogy, but a true story from Mark, who wrote to explain his situation in ministry to those who are outside the pastorate, and you put in the book, you call it The Parable of the Cook. Could you kind of share that with our listeners, and then let's kind of explain the flow of the book and how it works to help those like Mark who've been squashed by the ministry killers to the point where their ability to persevere is literally being destroyed or has been destroyed.
That was a very powerful first experience for me when I read it as well. The guy's name, in fact, throughout the book, I've changed names and so that people won't be able to, you know, trace back to who these people are. And when I get permission, I always make sure that their name is changed. But I talked to this one pastor we're calling Mark, who had gone through such a difficult time in ministry. He'd actually quit and moved to an island in the South Pacific.
I'm not We've all talked about doing that.
Yes, well, he did it. Well, after he made the move, he went through a several-year process of healing, and he's now back in ministry. But when he quit, he had a good friend of his who was a cook. And his friend asked him, could you put into words what he was experiencing as a pastor so that someone who was not in ministry could understand it? And he wrote this parable, and I reprinted it in the book. And although I'm not going to read it, I'm going to kind of give an overview. The story is of a cook. And he just loved to cook. And so he opened up a restaurant and people would come and they would enjoy the food. But after a while, they began to criticize it and they began to talk about, you know, the cafe down the street really has better food. And this is a unique restaurant that they weren't charged to come, but there was like a box at the end of the table where they would, they would leave. And if they would put money in the box, you know, way to show appreciation. Well, this cook was a very good cook. Cooked delicious food, but they began to criticize the food, they began to compare it to others, and then they even began to question, well, why in the world did he even ask us for money to pay for this food? That's kind of ridiculous. And so the parable concludes with that, this final paragraph I'll read. One day you announce that you're hanging up your apron. The diner will stay open, but under new management. As you make your last meal, you tell yourself, I'm done with the restaurant business. I'm better off doing something else with my life. Now maybe you can occasionally cook just for your family and for a few genuinely hungry people. So what this parable did was put into words in terms of a cook how this pastor felt when he gave his heart, he gave his life to feed the people. And ultimately, some of those people would criticize and compare, would not give back, and because of that very grating, painful experience, he kind of hung his apron up, and it took years for him to get back into ministry. So a very poignant, poignant parable.
Wow. Well, I know it grabbed my heart, and it really sets a good frame of mind for reading through this book. So let's get specific here. You talk about a specific process or a path of recovery for these wounded warriors of the faith. Can you kind of take us through that path briefly?
You bet. Well, the four parts involve four specific areas: safe people, healthy introspection, behavior change, and honest communication. And I unpack each of these areas with easy-to-remember phrases and key questions. But I'd like to take just a moment to key in on one of the most important things of the first step, and I call it open up with vulnerability. I believe pastors must find safe people in their lives to whom they will allow access to their inner world. And Michael Ross, the Pastors Institute, he's worked with several thousand pastors, and he says that the number one problem pastors face is isolation. A well-known author called Steve Otterburn says that if you look at the men in your churches, the ones who are least likely to have friends are pastors. Folks in the family have found that 40% of pastors don't have an accountability partner. My research found that only 10% of pastors seek out help from other people in dealing with these frustrations. So too many of us go it alone. So that very first part of the process that I strongly encourage pastors to do is find someone who's safe, who's loving, who cares about you, who will speak truth into your life with grace, because we need to open up our inner world. If we don't, that will set us on a trajectory where some of these underlying issues can fester and just sap our passion and ultimately lead us to make some devastating decisions.
Wow. Well, you've got four chapters that you deal with this process with. As our listeners read through this book, what are they going to learn? You talked about the first one. Let's talk about the other three for just a minute.
Sure. The first one, obviously, is to find that safe person in your life. The second is, as you begin to process these things, it's imperative that we are honest with what we are placing as a priority in our ministry, our frustrations, and being honest on how we are responding to those frustrations, whether it's an inward response or an outward response. The third piece is that not only must we be open to others, we must let them help us discover what really is true for us in our inner world and how we're responding. And the third part is that we must change. We must not necessarily take everything at once, but take one or two of these ways that we're responding to these frustrations and begin to change with the power of the Holy Spirit and with the help of others. And then finally, I suggest something that maybe is a little bit scary, but there are certain people in the church that need to know what they can do to help make ministry more fulfilling to us. It might be staff. It might be key people in the church. It might be your elders. It might be your deacons. It may be even a pastor wanting to bring the message and use the book as his entree into saying something like, I read a book based on research that described what pastors face. And church, I want you to know some of the frustrations that we struggle with and some of the things you can do that will help me be a better leader. So that's an unpacking a little bit more of that four-part process.
Well, I know this is going to be a tremendous help to people who read this book, and as they think through these issues, probably some of this is going to be quite revealing, perhaps even shocking to board members or leaders in the church. I know pastors are going to be able to readily connect, as I did many, many times throughout this book. I want to thank you for writing an incredibly timely, necessary, and excellent book. I want to encourage our listeners to purchase several copies. I want to encourage you to think through how many leaders are, if you're a leader in the church, how many leaders are in the church, and maybe pick up a copy for each and consider the possibility of just spending a quarter and doing this as a small group study. And the whole point of it being, how can we lift up our pastoral staff, and how can we help them, and how can we minister to them? Statistics, of course, are pretty grim right now for pastors leaving the ministry, and they're discouraged, and you've really opened up some doors and windows here to bring light and help in. I really appreciate that. We're just about done here, but obviously in an interview I can't ask maybe everything that's on your heart that you'd like our listeners to know. What would you like to say to our listeners before we kind of wrap this up finally, and that I might have missed or you haven't had a chance to say yet, Charles?
Sure. Well, thanks, Matt. First of all, thanks for letting me be on your podcast. And I suppose the final comment I'd like to make is this. Every pastor begins his ministry with a desire to make a difference for God. What happens, though, often is small subsurface issues can begin to grow, often with little warning, much like how termites grow inside the walls of a house, especially down south. And unless we pay attention to our inner world, those ministry termites can colonize and become deadly killers. And what I hope God will do with this book is to help every pastor to take a healthy look inside and get some help to do that look, to make that look. And when we do take a look and make the necessary adjustments, I believe God's Spirit will strengthen us to serve Him for the long haul with the greatest potential impact and the greatest personal satisfaction. There's a lot of great books out there. I encourage you guys and gals to read those books. But I guess one final quote I'd like to throw out here is F.B. Meyer. He was a Baptist contemporary and a friend of D.L. Moody. He authored some 40 books. And he made a statement about when God gives gifts to pastors, how we're to humbly use them to serve Him and others. Here's a quote that I excerpted from one of his writings. He wrote, "I used to think that God's gifts were on shelves, one above the other, and that the taller we grew in Christian character, the more easily we could reach them. I now find that God's gifts are on shelves, one beneath the other, and that it is not a question of growing taller, but of stooping lower." I think that quote reminds us that the opportunities and gifts God gives us are not to build us up, but rather, as we humble ourselves, God will use them to build others up. And I hope that message is what sticks.
Wow. Well, I really enjoyed this book. I'm encouraging all of our listeners to buy a personal copy. And if you're a leader in your church, I'm encouraging you to get a hold of a box of these books and do a small group study. There are 12 chapters, so it would work through a quarter. I know you would be greatly amazed or surprised, or you may find some of the revelations in this book perhaps just so stunning that you realize, our pastor might be human, and realize that he struggles just like anybody else does and needs people around him, as you said, through this process to help him do better. And of course, all of this is not about just the pastor, but this is about the local church growing and being developed. And I'm just encouraging each of you to pick up this book. It's a tremendous blessing. Charles, I'm just thrilled to have this time. You're investing in us, and I pray God's blessing on you. And I hope that we'll have you back again and tell us more about what's happening in your ministry, especially through this book and as God leads in the future.
Thanks, Matt. It's been my pleasure.
Well, God bless you.
And you.
And that wraps up our interview with Charles Stone today. We want to encourage you to order his book today. You can find links in the show notes to order the book and to Charles Church, Ginger Creek Community Church. Because of the incredible importance of this topic, we would encourage you to tell a friend about this interview. Remember, we are here to encourage achievement in godly leaders by emphasizing servanthood. Eagles. We would like to invite you to sign up for periodic email notifications of our new release resources as they become available. Just add your email to the sign up via email box on the right-hand side of the eaglesandleadership.org website and follow the prompts. And now, until next time, I'm your host, Mike Powers, praying you will become an encourager to your pastoral staff. God bless.